Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to the first broadcast of Live Trading Talk with Oliver Velez. Of course, my name is Oliver Velez, and I am really extraordinarily excited about this. Now, this is the first time I'm actually doing a radio-like show since the late 1990s. Now, a lot of my recent followers may not remember this or know this, that I used to actually have one of the first online radio shows in the active trading industry back in 1997, 1998. And what was really interesting about that show is that I was afforded a platform. I had a platform that allowed me to actually interview and have as guests on my show some individuals that actually went on to create and do and accomplish some amazing things in the active trader space. I interviewed individuals such as Jerry Putnam, who basically took over the New York Stock Exchange. We're friends to this very day. And Margwin and Stuart Townsend, the creators of Realtek, which ultimately became a couple who was very involved with the creation of Archipelago, which ultimately basically merged with the New York Stock Exchange and things of that nature. So it was a very fun time, and I enjoyed my radio show at that particular time immensely. I mean, we talked to some of the industry, some of the world's top traders. I had as guests some of the most prominent hedge fund owners of that day, and I unfortunately had to actually put the show on the back burner at that particular time because my travel schedule became rather crazy at that time. I had offices that I was opening up in, various parts of the world. I was opening offices in Asia and Japan and South Korea and Germany, London, various parts of South America. So my travel schedule prevented me from having a show that was very fixed in terms of a schedule. But today, in my somewhat, I would say, pre or semi-retired state, I'm able to pick up this dream again, and I cannot be more excited. I think that this show is going to provide me with the ability to do a variety of things. First of all, it's going to give me the ability to really answer very thoroughly the many questions that I receive on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, and quite frankly, hour by hour. And it's not that I receive very unique questions. Occasionally I do, but almost everyone coming into this industry, almost everyone that picks up or gets bitten by the market bug or the trading bug, they tend to have the same questions over and over again. So I find myself very much repeating things on a daily basis to new individuals coming into my world, coming into the trading industry. And this platform, this radio show, is going to give me the ability to sort of create an electronic footprint that is permanent, will allow me to really put the answers, my specific answers to these commonly asked questions in an archived state. And I think it's going to benefit a lot of individuals who are interested in doing what we do on a day-by-day basis. There is something that somewhat is lacking in the internet posts. So when I respond to a question, or even if I'm bantering back and forth with an individual on the internet, that form of communication, that form of communication is simply not, that form of communication is simply lacking something. So this is going to give me the ability to do it more thoroughly, to answer more thoroughly, and also to engage my audience, which I think is going to be very, very fascinating. I anticipate regular callers, and I anticipate very, very lively banter back and forth. We will have guests on the show at times. It's going to be wonderful. And what I would like to do at this particular point, if I can, is I'd like to bring on Dr. Dan Milkarski. He is an individual who has been a part of my trading team for, oh, how long has it been now, Dan?
Since 2007.
2007, that's quite a while. And he is now one of my top traders and one of the heads of my trading teams, and very much involved in what we do on a day-to-day basis. But welcome on board, Dan.
Thanks. Great to be here. Looking forward to the many follow-up shows. This being the first inaugural Oliver Velez broadcast, I'm sure we're going to have some exciting times going forward.
Absolutely. And it's gotten off to already an interesting start. I just hope that the audience is willing to be very lenient with us in the beginning. There are a lot of kinks. There are a lot of technical issues we're dealing with in the upstart of this. And so it's going to take us a few broadcasts to sort of get into a flow. And listeners, please just bear with us and so forth and so on. Now, Dan, we had an issue actually with the show I scheduled. So I had to do, obviously, a broadcast now show. So in essence, this show that's being broadcast right now is not the scheduled one I made. And so therefore, there is a different link for this show. So do you see the link to this show right now? Is that displayed to you in any way? Because what I'd like to do is get that on the socials if we can. And maybe I can actually do that. I might be able to do that myself.
I think, what I'm doing is for our own traders that were waiting on the link too. We just got that posted to them in the trade room, and I think they're going to be able to start logging into it now. So I can copy that link and send it to you real quick, and then you should be able to post that.
No, I actually had access to the link. I was just asking whether or not you had access.
Yeah, no, I do, and I got it. We got it into the trading room right now so that our traders should have it and start connecting as we speak.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say use this link. I'm going to get that new one posted for everyone. All right, and let me just do that. That's good. And so, the first one is always sort of like a test.
Sure. And what I thought was interesting was the fact that, the system just drops out on you at 4:28. Like, we're on the phone getting ready to go, and all of a sudden the link disappears. And I'm telling you, Oliver, I don't see it. And, you're telling me, I don't know what just happened. It just vanished. And it reminded me of, how a new trader would handle, hitting the wrong key versus when a pro hits the wrong key, they don't panic. They just say, oh, shoot, I hit the wrong key. And then they, either get out of the trade or change back to the right symbol. And they just go about it. So within, less than 5 minutes, you're like, all right, listen, I'm going to do a new link. We'll do this. We'll get it up and we'll just get going. You could just tell that is not the first time there's been a technology glitch in your 20-year career.
Absolutely.
But it reminded me of that because I see it all the time with new traders. They panic when something goes wrong, like, oh my God, the stop didn't work, or why didn't the order execute? And then they freeze and they just panic instead of, deep breath and looking at their error message or looking at their trade viewer to see what filled or what didn't. And that's kind of that, that difference between an experienced professional under pressure versus a novice under pressure. They don't quite have their reps in to handle themselves like that. I thought that was kind of interesting.
I'm getting a message from one of our traders. So, Oliver, man, I heard everything. I heard you guys organizing the show, what have you. Well, okay, that's cool. Well, listen, Apple earnings had a very, very strong day today, huh? Apple, nice. I was feeling a little bit under the weather this morning. So, you know, I decided, like, listen, I haven't taken a day off in a very long time. And decided not to do any trading this morning and basically slept in for the first time in a very long time. And boy, what a day I missed. Of course, as most individuals who are familiar with my trading and my trading style, you know that Apple is my go-to stock. I trade Apple about 98% of the time. And I'm really in the future going to work on trying to actually add another stock or two to my trading repertoire, but I have always been sort of like a market maker style trader. I trade stocks like a market maker. And this is a very interesting topic that I think our listeners would benefit from. A lot of people may not understand what I mean by I trade stocks, or Apple in particular, like a market maker. The fiduciary responsibility of a specialist or a market maker is to actually provide the other side of a trade. So, for instance, when there's a buyer and there is no current seller available, the market maker and or specialist is actually supposed to step up to the plate and be the other side. This function of a New York Stock Exchange specialist and market makers, is the purpose of this function is to provide liquidity. So the American markets enjoy some of the greatest or largest amounts of liquidity in the world. So compared to other markets in the world, the American markets tend to be the most liquid. And it is this function largely responsible for supposedly the liquidity of the U.S. markets, that we have market makers and we have specialists that take the other side of the public's orders. Now, so once again, what that means is that whenever a buyer comes into a market where there is no seller, there is no current seller at this price, the demand is so high that no one wants to sell at that price, the specialist and the market makers are supposed to step up to the plate and be the other side of that retail order. And it is this from my market making days back in the late 80s and the early 1990s that really shaped and formed my style of trading. And it trips up or confuses many individuals who watch me trade. It confuses them because it is so contrary to the retail approach to trading that they don't get why I'm buying a stock as it's dropping. Like, to them, intuitively, that is off track. Like, why would you do that? Why are you buying a stock that's going in the opposite direction of where you want it to go? And why are you selling your stock when it's actually going in your desired direction? Then it trips them up like nothing else. And that's one of the most frequently asked questions I get from individuals who watch my YouTube videos, and even individuals who have the ability to watch me trade live. Hundreds of traders have come into my office over the years to literally watch me trade live. And this is the number one confusing point. They don't get it. They see it working, though. They see it working consistently, but it's so intuitively opposite from the general assumption of how you play the market that it trips them up and it confuses them greatly. But if you think about this, think about the success rate of a New York Stock Exchange specialist. Rarely is there a losing day. Rarely. If you think about the success rate of a NASDAQ market maker, rarely is there a losing week. I mean, if a NASDAQ market maker starts to have losing weeks, he will
get fired.
Cease to be a, absolutely. He will cease to be a NASDAQ market maker very quickly. Trust me, I know this. So think about these two powerhouses, these two groups of traders are almost, they're not perfect and they're not flawless, but compared to your average retail trader, they win very consistently. And yet their function, their job is to buy stocks when they're declining, to be the buyers when stocks are declining, and to be the sellers when stocks are rising. Now, the general retail public believes that you should buy when things are favorable. And there are periods of time, there are periods when that does work. All right, there are definitely periods when that does work. Buy high to sell higher. And it works when a rising tide is raising all the boats. No matter what you do, no matter what kind of boat you have, you can have the Titanic, you can have a little paper boat, you can have a yacht, you can have a little fisherman's boat, you can have a plank. But whatever you have, if the tide is rising, all the boats, no matter what style of boat you have, is going to rise. So in a rising tide raises all boats scenario, that works. That works. But the market maker and the New York Stock Exchange specialists and the traders like Oliver Velez and the traders like you, we understand that in order for a basketball player to leap, he must first squat. Or before a dancer leaps into the air, he or she must first squat. So our approach is to grab the stock or the currency pair or what have you on the squat before the leap. And traders who hone that skill and ability, that specific skill and ability, will enjoy a consistency far greater than any consistency that can be obtained or grabbed by the individual who's jumping on board the item as it's moving in the desired direction. There's actually, when people watch me or witness me buying into a, what I consider to be a temporary decline, they feel nervous for me. They feel like that approach is risky, has more risk, and it actually has less risk. I mean, even when we talk about the stock exchange adage, right, of that age-old adage that says buy low, sell high, this is the epitome of that. Buying on the decline first, I'm speaking Spanish now, buying on the decline first, before the rally. Now, what you'll find in my approach to the market is that as soon, because I'm a sizable trader, as soon as the stock starts moving into my desired direction, I layer into the rally. I layer my sells into the rally so that the rally moves into my sell orders that are placed slightly above the market in at different prices. And I do exactly the reverse on the downside. Now, I do know that I used to call this approach my ATM approach to trading. Now, Dan, you have found that sometimes when a trader is very young at trying this, that they can get themselves in trouble. So I believe that at times you have encouraged traders not to start off with that style. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I have, because and I remember myself first learning and going back to that stage. One, they generally don't have the capitalization required to build into a position properly. Two, they don't have enough experience to understand a dip in a rising stock versus a decline in a weak stock. And the biggest mistake I saw was the inability to identify the correct trend in the first place. So if a stock is downtrending and starts to drop and the trader starts buying into it, they just get run over. Versus a pullback in an uptrend, when you're buying into support on a pivot or support into a moving average in anticipation of the buy setup coming, that's a whole different skill set. So I've told traders that are first starting, you're not going to miss out on a position where if you're only accumulating 200-300 shares and that's it, it's going to, you can get that almost on any stock at any time you want with a click of a button, versus someone's trying to get 5,000-7,000 shares over an average price in an area or a range, more like the professionals do, right? Big hedge traders, hedge funds guys don't go in and say, I want 1,000,000 shares of Apple at $110, right? They accumulate their position and they spread it out and they look for that. I need that lower third area, right? So when we're doing that type of pro, and I call it anticipation, and I'll tell traders in the room, listen, I'm going to start here and I'm going to play this 50 cent to $1 range, but you can simply wait for the 2 minute turn or the 1 minute turn because you might only want to get 200 shares or 100 shares. So you can grab it at any moment. You don't need to build into the range. So that's kind of been my take for the newer traders, is just simply watch, learn from it. It helps you identify trends better. It helps you learn anticipated follow through. It helps you learn average true range as stocks are making their micro moves. Because a lot of times traders, I'll see them catch a good turn and they'll get 30-50 cent move off of like a 10 cent risk and then just look at it. And I'm thinking, well, why aren't you taking that? You know what I mean? If you made 500% in your swing trade, you'd certainly take some profit. But so then they get mesmerized by the trend and they don't want to sell anything, or they over anticipate and it drops just a little and they buy way too early. Like there hasn't even been a 1/3 retracement and they're already buying into the dip. So by the time it does turn, they've been upside down for so long, they panic. Now they sell out and then the stock goes their way. So that's why I've told them to just be a little patient with that.
Well, you know, what I'm constantly telling traders, the point I try to get across to them with my approach to trading is saying, listen, if you're losing, the vast majority of novices lose the vast majority of times. We know that. And the game of trading is designed to create the majority as losers. I mean, there's definitely this 7-8% of market participants are consistently profitable, and the 91-92% are depositors into the market. And if you have the ability to actually make the switch from the 92% that will forever be depositors into the market to those that are the takers, the 8% are takers of the deposits, right? Then you are at the top of the game. And very few, 8%, very few make it to that side. And sometimes it breaks my heart because you see an individual that wants nothing more in life than to be able to do this like you. They will dedicate hours studying and reading and virtually spending sleepless nights. And it breaks your heart. You know, like this person's just simply not going to make it. But it is what it is. And so the few make it to the other side. And that's the truth. And I tell people this up front, but what I also tell them is that, listen, if you are losing consistently, if you're losing more often than you're winning as a trader, then it must mean that, number one, almost everything you're doing is backwards. Almost everything you think you should be doing is absolutely 180 degrees in the other direction. So whenever you think you should be buying, that's when you should be selling. And whenever you think you should be selling, that's when you should be buying. I mean, how else are you losing consistently except doing something consistently to create that losing record? You can't lose consistently without being consistent at doing something. And whatever you're doing is 100 degrees in the opposite direction. Whatever you're doing, whatever you're thinking, whatever you're believing is 100% wrong. Otherwise, you would experience different statistics. And so what I tell them is that if you think you should buy when things are moving up, then how's that working for you? And if you think you should, right, if you think you should, if you think I'm wrong and you see my record, but then how is what you're doing working for you? If you think that as a stock is rallying, you should be buying, I will forever sell to you. I will be the seller to the individuals who believe that they should be buying things that go up. Now, there is a different approach when we're talking investing. There is a different approach when we're talking, core and position trading. But when we're talking about pulling out money out of the markets in minutes and then repeating it for another block of minutes and repeating that for another block of minutes, this is the game. This is how you play the game. It is so apropos that it is completely against the ideas or the beliefs of most of the market participants. It's supposed to be. You don't have New York Stock Exchange specialists with radio shows. You don't have many NASDAQ market makers who are out there with newsletters spreading this idea. They don't talk about it. But what is designed in the industry is to teach individuals to – the industry is designed to teach people to go in so that they are at a time where the pros can come out. I mean, if we think about it this way, we think about it on the macro side. When in an economic cycle do all of your magazine covers promote something positive? Think about that. When you walk into a magazine store or at an airport and you want to pick up a magazine to read during your flight, when all of the magazine covers are talking about how great the market is, wow, you are an idiot if you're not involved in a mutual fund or this. You pick up every magazine. When every magazine is saying, come on in, the water is warm, that's at a top. Now, if we go back to 2007, 2008, when the American economy in particular was in its worst shape ever in American history, we lost companies that were in business for 150 years. Some of the most venerable financial firms went out of business. Bear Stearns, out of business, 150-year-old firm, blue-blooded, out of business. Our car industry was completely out of business. And had it not been for a government bailout, we would not have a car industry. Unemployment was through the roof. We had debt at a level that words can't even explain. We were mired in wars. I mean, people have a short memory. We were on the brink of financial disaster. And yet that was the most appropriate time to get in. We have now experienced virtually 7 years, unprecedented years, without an interrupt to speak of. Think about this. The very time that it was the juiciest, that it was the most opportunistic to get in, every single magazine color predicted doom. Every single news program was telling you to stay away. And yet, the most opportunistic time to get in was 2008. Now, almost 7 years later, what's the story? We have record earnings by generally the U.S. corporate community. Earnings have outstripped virtually every single year in existence in financial history. We have had a market that has moved to new high after new high after new high with a vengeance that it has never had before in its entire existence. It is so thorough, it is so powerful, It is so almost 45 degree-ish. That's our term for extreme power, all right, that even the professionals are saying, OMG, can this be real? Now, after 7 years, is this really the time as an investor to really be aggressive on the buy side? No, the time to have been aggressive was 2008, 2009, 2010. 2015, late 2015, 2016 is not the time. Now, let me take this opportunity to reveal a little bit of history. I know I'm talking a lot, Dan, you know, but you're used to it, Dan. A little bit of history that's connected with the markets and the political scene, right? Because I'm on a roll right now. So here's something else that a lot of people don't understand about markets and how it synced a lot of times with the political scene. Markets tend to perform much more favorably under Democratic rule. Now, I'm not a Democrat. I will tell you that right off the bat. Do not think that I'm a Democrat. Do not think that I'm anything for that matter. I am a trader. That's all you can think. I'm pretty much neutral. I hate certain things about the Democrats. I hate a lot of things about the Democrats, to be honest with you. And I hate a lot of things about the Republicans. All right. So I'm really kind of neutral. I use the political scene for my work, which is to find income and wealth through the markets worldwide. That's what I do. I am a speculator. And I've managed to get to a place where I do it exceedingly well. All right. Now, most people don't understand that markets perform better under Democratic rule. Go back. We enjoyed what? President Obama is in office for 7 years. Almost the day he took the oath, the market stopped going down and then rallied to unprecedented new highs. It's still rallying. That's crazy. Now, if we go back to the 90s, we had similar market environment. Oh my God, the 90s were juices. I mean, I experienced enormous wealth creation during the 90s. A lot of people did. President Clinton. All right. Now let's take the other side. Almost every single market crash, almost every single financial downturn has happened under Republican rule. Now, you can come up with all the reasons behind this, your theories, or that doesn't matter. I'm just talking facts. I'm a market player. My job is to understand the facts and to find out how to profit from those facts. My opinion stays to the top. I don't give a hoot about your opinion, nor I don't even give a hoot about my opinion. It doesn't matter. Just the facts matter. So if we go back to the crash of 1987, one of the most unprecedented drops in market history, more wealth was disappeared during the crash of 1987 than in almost any other market crash in history. President Reagan, right? When we talk about the internet bubble crack, the crack of the market from 2000, 2001, I mean, 65% of financial firms went out of business. That's not even talked about in the early 2000s because of that decline and because of the new SEC rule called pattern day trading rule. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But no one talks about this. This is brushed under the carpet that 65% of all financial firms, the little mom and pop brokerage firms, the money management firms, these firms went out of business on the decline in the early 2000s. President Bush. When we experienced the American economy on the brink of financial disaster, 2007, the collapse of the real estate market, the collapse of some of our most venerable financial firms, President Bush. All right. So think about this. President Obama comes into office. We start going up in the markets, Democratic rule. Markets experience nothing but straight up, straight up, straight up, straight up action. Now, who do you think, Dan, which side is probably going to get the presidential reins, Democrats or Republicans in your view? And what do you think?
In the next election?
The next election.
Yeah, it all depends on who gets nominated at this point. Depends
well,
on who they put
true.
Up there.
That's very true. But here's my view. I believe.
I think it's time to swing back the other way, is what I think.
Absolutely. For whatever reason, the reasons don't matter. It's just the fact.
Right.
I believe Republicans get the reins again. They're going to get the reins the next, whoever it is. I don't care who it is. But think about this. 7-year bull market and during Democratic rule. Then a Republican comes into office. Now you have linked up a political market-related statistic that markets perform much more poorly during Republican reign. It's lining up so perfectly that the reins get handed over to the Republicans. The market is poised for arrest after 7 years of running a 7-year marathon. Imagine a marathon runner who's used to running 4 years, and you say, listen, I know you've been training to run 4 years your entire life, but you've got to run 7 years now. I mean, how tired is that marathon runner? My God, traders, listen to me. We are in store for one of the biggest wealth opportunities that's ever come, because the average bull market lasts 4.5 years. The average bear market lasts about 1.5 to 2 years. All right. Now, the average bull market, 4.5 years, we're going into the 7th year. And let me tell you this. If there's one thing I've learned as a professional trader over the last 29 years is this, that when the market goes a little bit, even a little bit beyond its statistical norm, there is going to be a price to pay. OMG, when that bill comes for the market having gone a little bit extra, it is a very big bill. And you know what? As I speak these words, Dan, there's saliva dropping down the corners of my mouth. It is going to be, it's going to be just a wonderful opportunity. Yes, people are going to get hurt that don't understand how markets work and perform, but that's just the game. That's the way it is. And that's the price you pay for ignorance and not being educated and not being at the top of the game here. But markets are poised. Mark my words. I'm saying this on air. This is going to be in transcript form. This is going to be in archived form. You're going to be able to listen to this years from now. But listen to my words. It's coming. It is coming. And we are going to be right there. Now, we were fortunate enough to benefit from this 7-year run. I mean, I had my traders in all kinds of things. Home Depot from $28. We had a variety of plays in things like even McDonald's in the 60s and IBM in the 80s. Look at where those things are now. It's crazy. Everything from Facebook to Apple to Amazon to Starbucks to, oh my God, it's just been crazy. But it is time. It's time to really start thinking the other way. And it's not that we're at the absolute top. Maybe we are, maybe we're not. But I believe that if the market moves to new highs from here, it is a false new high. I will not respect it. I will not believe it. And there are times when a market can move to new highs, but it's not real. And one of the ways a market can move to new highs is not real is that its most heavily weighted items are strong, but nothing else is. And that's a false new high. So Apple represents what percentage? I don't know. Apple like just moves the indices left and right, doesn't it, Dan? I mean, isn't that
it was too high on the Nasdaq. They actually reweighted it a little bit because it was having way too much of an impact, and then they finally moved it. So it's not as bad as it used to be since they did the restructuring. Your comments about the market, I think for those that have not been, like, I was through the bubble, the tech bubble. That was my first crash. And I got hurt bad, and it kind of put a damper on my trading career for a while. And then when I got back around and, you know, figured some things out, that a bull market makes a novice believe he's a great trader. I lived that. You know, I traded through the 90s as I got into it and thought I was a good trader until the correction and the tech bubble fixed that for me and made me realize that, okay, the rising tide lift all boats theory makes you believe you're a great trader when in fact you were just in a good market and you didn't know how to handle a down market. So
absolutely,
I paid the price and I learned. Then when the crash came again, 7 and 8, and the real estate bubble is what set it all off, I made back way more than I ever lost because I was prepared and, as you said, excited. And when it started, it was like, here we go. This is going to be a huge payday if you understand what's happening. The people that have not lived through a crash yet may not understand or fully appreciate what the opportunity is going to be. But as most recently as just within the last year, you can see a micro version of this if you look what happened to oil. It got way too high, way ahead of itself. Everybody talking about, once they said, I saw somebody actually say $200 a barrel oil. When I saw that, I was like, it's over. It's over. I don't remember who, somebody got on CNBC and said, oil's going to $200 a barrel. And I remember either texted you or emailed somebody. I said, Oliver, someone just called $200 oil. That's it. We're done. And within weeks, it started turning over. And people saying, oh, it'll hold at 100. It'll hold at 70. And you and I are talking about, man, this thing might go to 20 bucks. Like, we're looking down the road that oil might hit $20. And so we just saw a micro version of this, you know?
Absolutely. And speaking about oil, I mean, it is going to be one of my key focus areas for 2016. You've heard it here first. Oil is by no means going away. I don't care what you have read. I don't care how many people come on television and start talking about the new world. We're using less oil. Oil is here to stay. And it is going to come into vogue again. And I believe the year that it comes into vogue is 2016. So oil is an area of high interest for me in the very, very near future. I'm watching it actually as we speak like a hawk. And so that's a very big area. You know, Dan, we wanted this episode to talk, we wanted to use this episode, or this broadcast, I should say, to talk a little bit about retail trading versus pro trading. And I'm constantly referring to it. And I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings, because usually when I talk about retail, it's like with a little edge to it, like they don't know anything. And a lot of people don't realize that I actually owned one of the largest direct access retail brokerage firms in the U.S. back in the 1990s and part of the 2000s. Now, when I say one of the largest, I'm not talking about retail firms like E-Trade and TD Ameritrade. No, nothing like that. But we're talking about direct access, where there's this brokerage that give their traders direct access. You are not sending an email order. Like, a lot of people don't understand that in a lot of retail firms, you press the buy button, right? And it's really not direct to the market. You're not directly in connection with the market. There is a middle person. Oftentimes, you're just getting filled from the market maker who is paid by the order flow from that retail firm, and you're not going to the market directly. So when I talk about direct access, it means you hit the button and you're direct to the market. There's no person between you and the market handling your order. It's not an email. It's not an electronic message. It's direct. All right. And in our world, that's extraordinarily important. We can't be going through two and three different hops before we get filled and so forth and so on. So I had one of the largest, all right? We were one of the first, too. There was MB Trading. Some people may know that firm. Great guys, by the way. Great guys, still in business. MB stands for Manhattan Beach Trading. It was Manhattan Beach Trading and me. And we basically ruled the direct access industry back in the 1990s. I had 6,000 traders trading directly with the market, which made my firm and me pretty powerful in the industry. And so many of the deals that I enjoy today are from that era, all right, where we were just pushing so much volume through Archipelago, which became New York Stock Exchange Archipelago. I was the first trader to place a trade on the Archipelago ECN exchange, which again became the New York Stock Exchange. It's crazy. My traders and I lost so much money because it was horrible. The technology just didn't work in the beginning, but we used it because it was so cutting edge. I had a relationship with the creators, Stuart Margolin Townsend and Jerry Putnam, and we used my traders to really work out a lot of the kinks in the Archipelago exchange. Now, so this was the beginning era of really true professional capability being accessible by the individual, all right? This was always direct access, was always available and always enjoyed by the institutional world, but the individual began to be able to have direct access. And so we were the pioneers when it came to that. Now, Dan, let's talk a little bit about retail trading versus professional trading. And so let's go down and explain, if we can, let's explain what we mean by retail. What when we say retail traders and retail trading, how do you explain that?
What I think it is people, they can have a, you know, an active account, whether they're day trading, they can day trade through retail firms. They don't usually do well because the cost is so high and they end up losing a lot on fees. But it's trying to understand the difference between maybe somebody that's trying to hold a stock. I think more retail trading are swing traders or investors, and professional day traders are trying to generate income, you know, hourly or daily. And I think for a retail trader, they may not understand that concept. Like, how can you make money in an hour, a half hour every single day, you know, unless there's maybe they see an earnings play on TV and they think, oh, well, you must have been in that play or this play. They don't understand that the leverage is different and the direct access is different, that you can trade at a higher level of buying power within the arena. You can get direct access to the market makers and the level two trading, that you can in fact be like a market maker. And the market makers you referred to earlier and the specialists you referred to earlier, the reason they're not losing and they're making money every day is they're not buying something off the open and hoping to God that by 4 o'clock it's higher. And I think too many retail traders are stuck in that buy and hold mentality, whether it's holding for half a day, a week, a month or whatever. They don't understand how can you make a trade at 9:35 and be out of it at 9:45 and make another one at 9:50 and be out of that by 10 and another one at 10:05. And they just can't process how that even makes sense, because in their head, there's hundreds of dollars of commissions that are being generated. So how could you possibly make a profit? And also, how are you buying enough shares to make that movement profitable when they can only buy 4 times their deposit, right? If they have... Right. They're 25,000. They only have 100 grand to work with. Where on a professional side, if you had that same deposit, you might have $250,000 or more to work with. So
right,
you're trading
absolutely.
Much more like a professional at that point.
Well, absolutely. And so, you know, I'd like to just point out some obvious things. First of all, there is something called the pattern day trading rule that retail traders are subject to. So what that means that back in 2000. In 2001, actually, several weeks after the Twin Towers were destroyed by that horrific terrorist attack, there was another horrific attack on the industry by the SEC, which instituted the pattern day trading rule, which says that you need to have $25,000, a minimum of $25,000 in your account to trade actively. If you have less, you cannot trade actively. And this was such a major blow to the industry that what I explained earlier, that 65% of existing financial firms went out of business because they relied on traders that had $10,000, $5,000, $8,000, $3,000, $16,000 to trade actively. And many traders would say, listen, let me put 5,000 and try it. And then maybe they'd blow through 5,000. I'll put up another 5,000. And they felt more comfortable doing that than putting up a big giant chunk all at once. So many firms that built their business on the small accounts actively trading went out of business because a lot of those traders didn't have $25,000. They wanted to trade actively but didn't have it. So many of them said, you know what, I'm just going to close my account. And firms went out of business. It was like dominoes. It was incredible. At the time, I had 6,000 traders, and I lost like 50% of my traders because they just either didn't have $25,000 and or didn't want to put $25,000 in. And because they were disallowed to trade actively like they had learned to trade, they just closed their account. Now, I was sizable enough to survive that horrific event, but it's still in existence today. So retail traders have to open up an account at a retail brokerage firm with usually a minimum that's even more than $25,000. Because remember, if you take a trade at $25,000 and you lose $1, you're below the $25,000 pattern day trading number and you can't day trade. You can't trade actively. So many firms say if you want to trade actively, you need $50,000 or you need $30,000. But it's usually something more than $25,000. And now what's also interesting with that, when they instituted the pattern day trading rule, which still is in existence today, they changed the margin rule from 2-to-1 to 4-to-1. So they took something away and then gave the retail trader something, which is a little bit more buying power. So now $25,000 intraday, not overnight, but intraday, if you want to trade actively and try to make a living or try to make something every day from the market, you can have four times the amount of your deposit. So $25,000 is $100,000 in buying power. You can control $100,000 worth of merchandise. Now, that's fairly nice. However, if you hold overnight, it's only 2-to-1. Now, let's take the professional trader. What does it actually mean to be a professional trader? It means that you don't actually have an account. A professional trader is trading for a firm, and they are trading the firm's account. That's distinction number one to understand. It is not your account. When you are a professional, you are trading another firm's account. It is not yours. A retail trader trades his or her account. You're literally and actually trading your capital. As a professional, you are not trading your capital. Now, some of these professional traders do have capital up. And let me explain that a little bit because that's very interesting. Having capital up is distinct and different from it being your account. It's not your account. In a scenario where a trader has capital up, they're putting a deposit, a security deposit, which many professional firms require. They're putting a security deposit in front of the firm's capital, which means that the firm feels safe because every losing dollar you create, every losing trade, is going to be subtracted from your security deposit. So their capital is safe. This is what must be understood as one of the key points of difference between retail trading and professional trading. That oftentimes in a professional firm, they will ask you to put up a security deposit. That security deposit secures them from losing their money off your bad trading if you experience bad trading. So, in many cases, this can be as small as $5,000. Some firms will accept as small as $3,000 security deposit up front. Now, let's take the 5,000 number because that's a common number amongst professional firms that say, listen, you want to trade professionally? Okay, we're a professional trading firm. You need to put up $5,000 to secure us from your losses. Okay, so you put up $5,000 deposit This does not mean that you're trading your $5,000. You're not trading your $5,000. The best way to look at it is that your $5,000 is off to the side in escrow. You're now going to be given something like $100,000 account from the firm. So the firm's going to subdivide their account, and they're going to take out, they're going to section off $100,000 in buying power, and you're going to be able to control $100,000 in a lot of cases with only having to put up $5,000. Whereas that the retail trader has to put up $25,000 to get $100,000. And that's one of the great benefits of going pro. You need less capital up to control the same amount of buying power or even more. So a trader who puts up $10,000 might get $200,000 or more, depending upon the trader's record and the relationship with the trading firm and whether you're really consistently profitable. Because when a trading firm understands and sees that you're consistently profitable, they might give you more, you know. But this is the key thing to understand. You don't have an account. You're trading the firm's account, all right? It's not an employee relationship. It's an independent contractor relationship. You can log on whenever you want to trade. You can trade anytime you want to. You can trade any day you want to. You can trade from anywhere you want to. It's all up to you, but it is not your account, all right? And so that's very important. And I get this question at least 5-6 times a week. And so I'm glad we're clarifying this now. So that's distinction number one. Distinction number two is that the cost structure for professional traders are far more favorable. First of all, most retail firms charge by ticket or by trade. So $9 a trade or $10 a trade or $5 a trade or $7 a trade. All right, a professional trader can't trade with rates like that. That is highway robbery to a professional trader. All right, these guys are not flying back and forth between their offices on their private jets because $10 a trade is small. No, $10 a trade is enormous. Okay. Professional traders usually get charged per share. So, for instance, if your cost is 30 cents per 100 shares, now look at this, 30 cents per 100 shares. How much is that per share? That's crazy, all right? So 1,000 shares would cost the trader, right, $3. But now listen to this. Get this. If the trader trades 100 shares back and forth 10 times, that's 10 transactions. 10 100-share transactions comes up to 1,000 shares. Those 10 trades cost $3. Whereas in the retail world, if it was $10 a trade, those 10 trades would cost $100. That's crazy. A professional trader cannot operate in the retail world. You cannot trade like me, like I do, and like I train my traders to trade in a retail environment. It's impossible. The fees would completely chew you up. They'd be buying new air private jets to fly around on the money you would be generating trading my style, our style, the professional style in a retail environment. It's just simply impossible. So there's the cost structure there. And so a lot of traders have, they get charged 30 cents every 100 shares, 30 pennies. Think about this. You buy Apple 100 shares, you sell Apple 100 shares, and it costs you 60 cents. That's crazy. All right? Some traders who are more active get less. Our traders, what's the rate our traders, our IFT proprietary traders, Dan, what's their rate right now, just to give the listening audience an idea?
They're paying, when they first start out, they get 15 cents for 100 shares.
15 cents. So if they buy 100 shares of Apple, it costs them 15 cents. If they sell that 100 shares, it costs them another 15 cents. Their transactional fees $0.30. That's crazy. In the retail world, that's $20 in some firms. If we start going overseas, like in Brazil, hi, Brazil, I know you're there. Hi, Brazil. We start going overseas like in Brazil, or we start going overseas like where I am in Colombia, the retail transactional rate is like $30. That's crazy. $30 a transaction. Now, it's just virtually impossible unless a Colombian trader goes pro, which is very easy to do today. Or unless a Brazilian trader, I don't know what the going rate is in Brazil, maybe it's $20, or even if it's $15, that's crazy. You can't trade the way we trade with those transactional costs. You have to go pro. Now, when we say go pro, it really means a lot of individuals think that it's like pro professionals are like, no, that's pension funds and hedge funds. And that's true. That is part of the pro community. But we're talking about the individual pro community. There are individuals, not institutions or corporations, that are also in the pro category. There are individual pros that trade for themselves, but they're considered pro. Some of them are licensed and others are not licensed. But these pros are typically referred to as proprietary traders, or prop traders for short. And so when you hear the term I'm a proprietary trader, proprietary trading, prop trading, that's really the pro category. And what that means is that you're trading firm capital. You're trading for a firm, a proprietary trading firm. You may have a deposit up. Our traders do not have to put anything up. There is no deposit to put up in our firm, but many firms require that you put something up first, $5,000, $10,000, or whatever, and then they say, okay, this is going to secure us from your losses. Now, here's $100,000, or here is $200,000 to trade. Now, many of these firms will set parameters on your trading. They will say, okay, you can't lose more than $1,000 on any given day, and if you do, your account gets shut down for the day. I mean, after all, it is their account that you're trading. They do not want you going in there and just becoming a disaster on day one. So they're going to control your trading to a certain extent. They're going to set parameters. They're not going to control it, but they're going to set parameters. And you can sometimes negotiate those parameters. So if someone says, well, you can't lose more than 200, you say, well, you know what, my trading style is a little bit different. You think you can give me 500, or 1,000 or whatever, and you can negotiate these things. They're going to give you a trading rate. Now, the way these firms make this money is that they charge you a commission rate that's higher than their cost. So if their cost is 15 cents for every 100 shares, they might charge you 30 cents for every 100 shares. They also make money, and this is a very important distinction to understand between retail trading and proprietary trading. Because you are trading their account, because you are using their rate, which is an institutional rate, and you are using all of their execution routes and so forth and so on, they are going to take a percentage of your trading gains, which is only fair. All right? So they might take 10%, they might take 20%. They might take 50%. Every firm is different, all right? They may have a graduated scale where first you earn 50%, then you can earn 70%, then you can earn 90%. They may have a graduating scale. Every firm is different, but they make money two ways. They make money on your profits. So let's say you get 80% of the gains and they keep 20% of the gains. That's a common structure. So you're going to sacrifice 20% of your trading profits, but you don't have to put that much capital in to secure your trading. And all the professional traders trade in this environment. They're no longer retail. You see, this was not the case when I had my direct access trading firm back in the 90s. Back then, the direct access trading firm was the kind of the precursor to the today's proprietary trading firm. And so there's been a shift or an evolution, if you will, to the proprietary trading firms of today. I got my start as a professional trader in one of the early versions of the proprietary trading firm. Many of the things that they did with me are now illegal, but they weren't illegal back then. I had a commission rate of $50 a trade, which was great back then, believe it or not, $50 a trade. I was like, wow, why are the rates so low? $50 a trade. I had to borrow money. I borrowed $20,000 from my medical doctor and $20,000 from a broker who was aware of my trading, was actually the broker for my trading at a firm. I left that firm to go out on my own, but I had no capital. So I borrowed $40,000, $20,000 from my medical doctor, $20,000 from the broker that processed my trades at the firm that I used to trade for. And I had, with what my wife came up with, we had $4,000. So I had $44,000. I went to this proprietary trading firm based on Park Avenue in New York City. And I showed them my trading records and showed them what I had. And they wanted $50,000. I could only come up with $44,000. They accepted it. They put the $44,000 into an escrow account. I had to sign an escrow agreement. And it said that all of my losses were going to come out of the $44,000, and that once I lost $24,000 of the $44,000, so once if I ate through everything and left $20,000, that I had the potential to lose my chair in the firm. So they wanted really me to try to retain that $44,000 up, right? And I was charged, they gave me $500,000 in buying power, and they charged me interest like the $500,000 was a loan. That's the part that's not legal today. So they're like, okay, so here's your $500,000. Now it's 18% interest annually, but it's calculated by the hour. So you're going to see your account get dropped every hour by this amount. I'm just like, oh my goodness. So $50 a trade, I've got this hourly calculation of interest that causes my... So I've got to outpace my trading gains that have to overcome $50 a transaction. They have to overcome this hourly deduction from my account. All right. Then on top of that, I was charged that $1,000 a month for the chair just to have a trading desk at the firm. I was charged $1,000 per month for the real estate. And then on top of that, I first got 40% of the gains. The firm got 60%. But if I lasted 3 months, we would go to a 50-50. And if I lasted 6 months, we'd go to 60-40, where I would get 60%, or my partnership with my partners would get 60%, and they would get 40%. But I had to prove that I could last the first 3 months and then prove that I could last the second three months to get to the point where we earned 60% of the gain. So again, $50 a trade, all right, $500,000 in buying power, interest deducted from my account hourly, $1,000 a month trading fee or real estate fee or seat fee, whatever you want to call it. And I think there's some firms to this very day that charge a seat charge, don't they, Dan? Are you aware of that?
The firm, it's not really a seat charge. It's being part of the membership. There's a small monthly fee that's like $50 or something, I think.
Right.
Not really a seat charge.
You know, what's cool, what's interesting is that, I mean, the formation of our proprietary trading firm was largely built off of my experience in the proprietary trading world and having these deals. So with our traders, there is no upfront deposit that goes into security or whatever. There's none of that. They don't put any capital up. There is no seat charge or anything like that, but there is a membership charge. All right. There's a small membership charge.
It's small. It's negligible.
It's small.
Compared to the $1,000 a month.
Right. It's a cell phone bill. It's $125 a month. I mean, come on. It's a cell phone bill. All right. And really, truthfully, if $125 a month is challenging for any trader who wants to do this professionally, they really should not be thinking about doing this at this particular point in their life. They need to go fix their life to where $125 a month is just simply not an issue. You know,
no, so I mean, you can't even go out to dinner. You can't go out to dinner for that. Right. No, I mean, you go to dinner on a weekend and you can't even go to dinner for that. So it is really, really small.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you know, you should not be in our world if you can't. If $125 is like, oh, my God, how am I going to get that? You need to go fix your life and get it together and get it to a point where that's just not an issue. But, yeah, so, you know, we have lowered the barrier to moving into the professional trading environment. We traders trade our institutional rate, which is almost unheard of because we are so huge. Our rates are pretty much beat almost any other firm out there. We put up the capital for the traders to trade. Dan, a lot of people don't understand why we don't. We say, listen, we have traders go through our simulation mode for 90 days or more, but 90 days. And some traders balk at that, like, but why? Why can't I do? So, well, listen, you know, I would not want, I'm giving you my money. If you put money in, okay, you can start from day one. But if I'm putting all of my money in and you are putting zero in, you have got to demonstrate to me first. I am not an idiot. I am not just in the business to throw money away. All right. You have to demonstrate to me that you got it, that you have some talent, some skill, or you're getting it. All right. So just demonstrate that to me. And it can't be over 10 days because you can get lucky over 10 days. It can't even be over 2 months. What if for 2 months there's a rising tide and rising tide raises all boats? Give me 3 months. If you were to put your money with a money manager, wouldn't you want to see several years? Show me your progress over the last several years. If you go put your money into a mutual fund, don't you look at the 5-year track record, the 3-year track record, the 1-year track record? All I'm asking for is 90 days. Show me, because trust me, if you can't show me on the simulator, how on earth are you going to show me with real money, with real capital? So invest 90 days into this. Show me, demonstrate to me, or use it as a learning. The last thing a losing trader should actually want to do is start to go live right away. All right? You need to get it. You need to get the keystrokes down. You need to know how to place your orders right. There are a zillion times I've wanted to buy and sold instead, or wanted to sell, and I still do that. I still make those errors. And so you got to work out all the kinks. You got to get used to the system. You got to get into the flow. Take 90 days to do that and get into the flow. All right? And then I will give you the capital. We will give you the capital to trade if you prove that you can generate $3,000. That's
and
it.
If you, and if you're, Oliver, if you're living in Brazil trying to trade and produce that same thing, it was funny when you mentioned what they pay. I had no idea they paid that high of a rate on the retail side. So just for fun, while you were talking, I just looked at yesterday, I pulled my report. And just to give these people an idea about how fees do matter, because I think too many traders don't understand that it will make or break you. If you don't have a fee structure for day trading that's in your favor, you're not going to make it. So if I look at yesterday's trading, I had a gross of just under 2,500, and with all fees, commissions, exchange, FINRA, all that, taxes, whatever, my net was 2,300. So it only cost me $200 total to do all the trading I did yesterday. If I ran the $30 a trade scenario that you mentioned from what Brazil's having to pay, I would have lost $1,400 net. I would have went from up 2,300 to minus 1,400 due to the commission.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
That's what I mean. And I think, you know, I'm not the best trader who ever lived, but I'm pretty consistent. And I wouldn't have a shot. I wouldn't have a chance of making a profit with that fee structure.
No, I couldn't do what I do. I couldn't do what I do in a retail environment. It's just impossible. You can't do it with a retail account. And, it saddens me that, I have a lot of followers, a lot of watchers of the YouTube videos and watch me trading, and then they go try it with their retail account. It's just that's not going to work. I just can't do it. And it breaks my heart to see that. And they don't understand why, but dude, you can't do it with that cost structure.
You don't.
It's just not
going to
work.
And it might be another time. I know you're getting close to the end of your time here, but at another point, they also need to understand the benefits we have with ECN rebates, because we're not only do we have a ridiculously low commission, but because we're direct access, we are placing the orders straight to the ECN. If we place the right type of liquidity orders, they pay us for the order
right.
flow. So now
professionals get paid to add liquidity to all the exchanges, even the New York Stock Exchange. So if you place a liquidity-based order on the New York Stock Exchange, the New York Stock Exchange pays the trader, but you have to be pro. You can't be retail. The retail traders get it too, but the retail brokerage keeps that payment. So you can place a liquidity-based order at TD Ameritrade or E-Trade or TradeStation, and you might get a payment, but the payment doesn't go to you. The payment goes, they keep that. But our traders get the payment. We get payments from the exchanges. They pay us. They pay each trader to place liquidity-based orders. Now, I'm not going to get into what liquidity-based orders is right now because we don't have enough time to get into that, but those payments can be more than the 15 cents every 100 shares. As a matter of fact, what is the average payment? Isn't it like
the average,
is it 20 cents?
It's about 20. If you just say, it depends again on the routes, but on average as a whole, a good rule of thumb I give traders is figure 30 cents for removing and 20 cents for adding. So if you add it on both sides, if your 100 share example where it was 15 cent commission in and 15 cents out, that's 30 cents. But if you place liquidity order in, liquidity order out, you got a 20 cent rebate in and a 20 cent rebate out. You actually made 10 cents net on your cost.
So it's negative commission.
Money. Correct.
Right. There's
commissions. None.
And
you actually
got
extra money.
Absolutely. And if we really want to get into the real nitty gritty of this, when you watch my trading videos, you'll notice that when I'm placing orders ahead of the market, so if Apple is rallying and now I want to start selling into that rally, and I place orders a little higher than where the market is, that's a liquidity order. So I have no commissions on those fills. In fact, I'm making not only the money from my Apple trade, but I'm getting a payment from the New York Stock Exchange or whatever exchange I'm placing that order on because it's ahead of the market. And so the vast majority of my trades are liquidity trades where I get an extra payment. Now, back in the mid-20s, this became very popular for traders to trade specifically just for that payment. They didn't want stocks to move, and they just traded on the bid and on the ask. They'd find a stock that didn't move, and they'd trade millions of shares on the bid and millions of shares on the ask and just collect the payment. And some of them were making like $3,000 a day doing that, all right? And that's not really popular now because there's a lot more volatility and stuff like that. After the crash, after the internet bubble crash, things got very, very stale for a while. And that staleness caused stocks not to really move a lot. So professional traders said, we lost volatility. Let's now just trade for those rebate payments from the exchanges. Now we've got volatility again, and it's not as popular as it was before. But all of these are the great benefits of actually going pro. There is some downsides, though. U.S.-based citizens, in order to trade for a proprietary firm, in most proprietary firms, will require you to have a Series 56 exam. So you have to study for this exam. It's not the easiest exam in the world, but you have to study and pass this exam. And it's great, though, because once you do, you are a legitimate professional. I mean, you are in a true legitimate profession. As a professional trader, you, if you trade from your living room, you can write that off as your office. And there are all kinds of benefits that come from being a real, true professional. All right? This is, means that you, this is your business. And now you can conduct yourself like a business. You can take your deductions for, on your tax return as a business. And so great things regarding that, versus you can say you're a professional without the license, and you might be, but you might have to prove it to someone sometime. But if you have the license, you don't have to prove anything. You're a licensed Series 56 professional trader. And I think that's the route that most U.S. citizens should go. If you are not a U.S. citizen, you do not have to deal with the Series 56 exam. You don't have to do anything, except if you're with a firm that requires a deposit, you'll have to send a deposit in. All right. Or if you're with a firm like mine that doesn't require a deposit, all right, to trade my capital, then, you know, you don't need the Series 56 exam for that as well. But that's really kind of the only drawback. The other drawback, if I had to really press for one, Dan, is the fact that most proprietary trading firms will not allow you to hold stocks overnight. So you are expected to be an income-generating trader, which means that you buy Apple and you sell it, but you never go home having an open position on. This is not allowed in most proprietary trading firms. Now, some proprietary trading firms may allow you to do that if you have a very, very large security deposit up, because they just don't want to deal with the gap risk. So today is Wednesday, tomorrow at the open on Thursday, the stock that you had long from Wednesday night into Thursday morning is now opening down $10, and that's not, you don't have enough of a security deposit. So now they, part of the loss is theirs, and you might disappear, and they have to chase you down for whatever amount they lost because you did sign an agreement and yada, yada, yada. They don't deal with that. So most proprietary trading firms will not allow their traders to hold positions overnight unless they have a very, very large security deposit up. So that's the only other drawback I can think of. Now, in our Forex proprietary trading program, you can hold overnight simply because there's really not a real true gap risk there. So we allow our traders to hold overnight. But there is no question that if you want to do this right, if it is your desire to do this right, you need to go pro. Whether that requires you to get the Series 56 if you're an American, or if you're not an American, just sign up with a proprietary trading firm. You cannot do what I do in a retail trading environment. And why would you want to anyway? I mean, why would you want to pay those rates, and why would you not want to get retail exchanges as a professional? Why would you not want extra buying power and leverage to be able to control more with less of your capital up? In my case, none of your capital up. The last thing I want to point to before we close, because we've got about 3 minutes left into the program, is I want to talk a little bit about our simulator. And I know I have a lot of my own traders listening to this, and they can certainly attest to this, that there's a difference between a demo account and a simulator. See, if we talk about what airplane pilots go through, they go through simulator training. A demo would be like playing an airplane game on your iPhone. That's different. All right? We don't have a demo. We put our traders through simulation training, with guidelines, with cutoffs, with rewards, and great risks. So, for instance, every trader on our simulator training program has a profile. So let's say one trader's profile is you can't lose more than $300 on any given day. See, See, if you just have a demo, you can do anything you want to. There's no controls. There's no one's setting goals for you to achieve. No one's turning your account off when you hit a certain negative number. You can just do anything you want to. It means absolutely nothing to trade on a demo. But when you enter into our simulating trading program, trust me. Trust me when I tell you, you are going to be put to the test. Your skills are going to be put to the test. Your abilities are going to be revealed, whether you have them or you don't have them, because there is a daily max drawdown amount. And if you hit that $300 number, let's say that's your daily, every trader is different, but let's say your daily maximum drawdown is $300. If you hit that, you will either lose your trading, you will have to eliminate all the trades in your account, or the system will instantly eliminate for you. But listen, guys, we will have plenty of time to actually delve into this subject matter even deeper. I did not get an opportunity to take many questions today. We had some technical difficulties with the system, but those are going to be ironed out. Again, once again, I've only got about 60 seconds left. Thank you for attending. This is the start of something that I believe is going to be very helpful to all of my listeners. Please use radio@ifundtraders.com. If you really want a question answered, that's the best way to get a question to me for the next broadcast. Thank you very much. This is Oliver Velez signing out, but only for now. Ciao.